This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Welcome. Glad to see so many new faces on this beautiful and verdant morning. In light of the tragedy that I just heard about last night in Sri Lanka, I want to take a moment of silence. And let's use some of the Buddhist tools that we have. One of the most powerful ones is Tonglen, or Tonglen, which is essentially to breathe in the pain and suffering and breathe out love and acceptance. So let's just take a couple of breaths together. All of us are affected by that violence, even if we're very far away. So just also breathe in our own confusion and sense of chaos and lack of control, and breathe out love and a deep okayness for us as well. Thank you. I saw a couple of people, and sometimes people don't feel like they could come in. Would one of you mind making sure that they know they can come in? Especially I know that sometimes people from another culture feels that it's a more different type of practice where, you know, they shouldn't step in. So thank you, Nico. The topic that came to me today is loss. Which is kind of odd that this is what came to me, because I don't have necessarily something like Sri Lanka or a big tragedy in my life in recent years. Both of my parents are still around. I have a healthy and contented toddler daughter. I have good professional prospects. I have my health. And my life right now is kind of a summer. It's very lush, and there's a sense of richness and abundance. So it's just kind of odd that this is what I wanted to write about. However, I can feel that there's a sense of loss inherent in this fullness. You know, inherent in each season is its passing. I'm also someone who tends to think ahead, so I'm anticipating different kinds of loss that would come. And of course, like all of us, you know, we don't get to sort of the middle of life without a lot of loss and emotional scars and wounding. When I was 15, the Tiananmen incident happened in China where I was growing up, so I've lost my country then. And a few years later, I've lost my country again to being an immigrant here. I've since, in some ways, lost my primary language to being in my adopted country for much longer than in my native country. I've lost one of my parents in a way to being estranged for too long. Even though we're in relationship again, the connection is simply not the same. I've lost babies to abortions. I've lost many loves. I've lost the freedom of how I structure my own time and the last bits of my youth to being a mother. All of these have been a physical sense of loss, where tears would simply flow, almost like a deep illness. So I'm using those examples to say that we all experience deep loss. In a way, I've lost my seasons to simply what's coming next. I've lost my spring to the summer, and I will lose the summer to the next season. in the Chinese culture, because of his very long and tumultuous history, we understand loss relatively well. There is a story called Sai Veng, which means old man who lives on the frontier, who lost his horse. And this story is, like many stories, are completely embedded in the Chinese language, that every Chinese person knows it. And I don't see any nodding heads, so I will go ahead and read this this short story. The old man who lives on the frontier lost one of his prized horses. After hearing of this misfortune, his neighbors felt sorry and came to give their consolation. And Sai Veng simply said, "How could we know it's not a good thing for me?" After a while, the lost horse returned with another beautiful horse. Neighbors came over with congratulations on his good fortune. Sai Veng simply said, "How could we know it's not a bad thing for me?" One day, his son went out for a ride with a new horse. He was thrown from the horse and broke his leg. The neighbors once again expressed their condolences to Sai Veng, and he simply said, "How could we know it's not a good thing for me?" 1 year later, the emperor's army arrived at the village to recruit all able-bodied men to fight in the war. Because of his injury, Sai Veng's son could not go off to war and was spared from certain death. That's the story. So I do think, growing up in my culture, there is a sense that there are simply ups and downs like this, and we don't necessarily have to categorize them as misfortune or fortune. And the story also, in addition to teaching me about loss, I think it also taught me that social graces have very limited utility. And in China, old age is the one quality that allows people to wave away the social graces. So I've always been sort of looking forward to being able to do that. Recently, I noticed that there's a lot of caterpillars dropping from the trees. They're constantly landing on my jacket and so on. And it's a time of this metamorphosis, you know, their transformation that's happening. A few weeks ago, Vanya here talked about the process of the of that, right? The caterpillar turns into a soup, essentially. And out of that amorphousness, something else comes. So I think things like loss is an example of how language shapes us, shapes the thoughts, but language by nature is misleading. So, you know, spring is not lost to summer, like the day is not lost to the night. But if I say things that way, there is a different sentiment that is attached to it. I want to read a little bit of the Genjo koan that is sort of tricky for the mind, but it's one way to look at loss. It talks about firewood and ash. Once firewood has turned to ash, it will not again turn back to firewood. But it should not be presumed that firewood is before or that ash is after. The Dharma stage of firewood completely possesses a before and after, and also is free, fully free of before and after. The Dharma stage of ashes likewise embodies a before and after. Just as firewood does not return, so beings do not return to their lives after death. The teaching does not say life becomes death, but rather that life is without origin. The teaching does not say that death becomes life, but rather death is non-extinction. Death is its own time, and life is its own time, as are the winter and the spring. We do not suppose that the winter itself becomes a spring, or say that spring itself is now summer. So becoming what we need to become, just like each season becomes the other, it's necessary to let go of loss constantly. and let go of what we feel we could not let go of, especially. I'm talking about loss, but in the process of thinking about this, I recognize that I'm actually talking about freedom. And here I want to give you a couple of examples of people who inspire me, two musicians and one athlete. The two musicians are Evelyn Glennie and Nicholas McCarthy. Has people heard of them? No? They're both British. Yeah. And Evelyn is a profoundly deaf percussionist. And Nicholas McCarthy was born without a right hand, so he is a single-handed pianist. And one of them applied to the Royal College of Music in London, I presume, and the other one applied to the Royal Academy of Music. These are the two of the best music schools in all of England. And both of them were essentially laughed at and told, do not waste your own time and do not waste ours. Yet I encourage you to check out their music. And Evelyn teaches people essentially how to listen with their entire body. You know, they have taught me that the realm of existence is essentially infinite. You know, how she taught herself to sense the extremely subtle vibrations of the percussion. And she's extremely successful as a musician. And so is the other one, Nicholas McCarthy. You would not believe that this is a single-handed pianist. They challenged established fields, you know, an elite field. And in doing so, they increased the realm of their own life. And in doing that, they did the same for so many others. I'm a very visual person. I've always wanted to be an artist. So when I was young, I had a fear of losing my eyesight. I was very nearsighted growing up. And so I had this fear. But then eventually I had a realization, which is essentially our sensory experiences are infinite. And the human capacity is infinite, that if I did in fact lose my eyesight, other capacities would simply grow in that absence. And so I feel connected to these two musicians. And in my own way, when I was growing up, I felt very limited in my ability, in my power, in my capacity. So I especially connect with this kind of people who achieve freedom with their effort. Here I want to read another passage from the same koan by Dogen, the Genjo koan. And this is essentially my favorite sequence of words of all time. So, but anyway, like words, one reading does not do it justice. This has to be read over and over again in one's life. When a fish swims in water, in the swimming there is no end to water. When a bird flies in the sky, in the flying there is no end to sky. This is because from the beginning they're in accord with the water or the sky. With extensive activity comes extensive use, and with modest activity, less use. Yet essentially and everywhere, the full use is made of all that is functioning, and all that is functioning turns and moves freely. Leaving the water or leaving the sky would immediately be the leaving of life. For with the fish, water is life, and for the bird, sky is life. Also for the sky, the bird is life. For the water, the fish is life. Life is bird and sky. Life is fish and water. It is the same with practice, with realization, and with everything in life's duration. The athlete I want to bring up is Janine Shepherd. Have people heard of her TED Talk? No? She is she is someone who's talented in a number of sports and settled on cross-country skiing, and she's Australian. And, you know, in the process of preparing for the Olympics, she had a terrible bicycle accident that left her unable to walk, essentially for the rest of her life. She eventually gained some of that ability, but still she could not be an athlete. So life as she knew it was over, and as can be expected, she is devastated. However, a new life had just begun for Janine. She didn't know it then. But eventually she got into her head that she wanted to be able to fly, to become a pilot. And despite the fact that she could not drive to the pilot school because she can't drive a car, she learned to be a pilot. And not only that, she became a commercial pilot. She began to become an acrobatic flying instructor, and she was the first female director of the Civil Aviation Safety Association in Australia. She was known as an athlete, as Janine the Machine. And so she was still completely herself, even though she was no longer an athlete. She fully continued to become herself as life gave her intense challenges. And she was flying and increasing the sky, just as Dogen was talking about, making extensive use of her life and then increasing that space for others as well. So this is how I see loss as freedom. Freedom to. Freedom towards. And in a way, the loss is the carving away of the marble that reveals the figures in relief. That reveals Janine, reveals Evelyn, reveals Nicholas. I want to read a few first few lines of a well-known poem now called Kindness. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolving a moment, like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go, so you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. I think loss makes us receptive to kindness and makes us better human beings, you know, able to give and receive kindness. And what of the ultimate loss, which is death? You know, we as human beings, our bodies will burn out just like candles do. But the flame is freed, unleashed. You know, I read the Ganja Khan passage a little bit about death. Death is not the opposite of life. The opposite of death is birth. And here I want to read a few of Khalil Gibran's words on death. For what is it to die but to stand naked in the wind and to melt into the sun? And what is it to cease breathing but to free the breath from its restless tides, that it may rise and expand and seek God unencumbered? Only when you drink from the river of silence shall you indeed sing. And when you have reached a mountaintop, then you shall begin to climb. And when the earth shall claim your limbs, then shall you truly dance. So if we consider these points about loss and death, how should we live with our remaining breath? I recently started to look at the book Writing Down the Bones again and came upon this quote by Jack Kerouac. He's talking about writing, but I think this is as complete, a full and complete set of instructions about living as I have encountered. And he said these four lines. Accept loss forever. Be submissive to everything, open, listening. No fear or shame in the dignity of your experience, language, and knowledge. Be in love with your life. And for me in particular, I want to bring up kind of an image or a story. And that is a young woman standing in front of a door. When I was growing up, there was this magazine, essentially also called Reader's Digest, and filled with sort of rather sappy little stories that sort of my parents kind of roll their eyes at because they don't seem to have any effect on real life. But there was this particular small piece that made a strong impression on me, and it had a sort of a Russian sort of harsh sensibility, and I think it was translated from Russian. It was about a young woman standing in front of a door. And it was kind of a prose poetry, which I'm only paraphrasing, but it's something like, there's a voice asking this young woman, are you prepared to step through this door? Yes. Are you prepared to step through the next one? Yes. And the one after that? Yes. Are you prepared to give up what you have on the other side of this door? Yes. Are you prepared to give up what you know? Yes. Are you prepared to be ridiculed for stepping through this door? Yes. Are you prepared to be harmed for stepping through this door? Yes. And it kept sort of going on like that. And this is also a little bit like the story Vanya told a few weeks ago about someone who's prepared to spread the Dharma after some achievement on the spiritual path, whether or not they are prepared to be ridiculed, to be harmed, to be even killed. And only when one is ready to say yes, no matter the circumstance, and to this entire series of what could be, do they have the mindset to actually to be free and to spread the Dharma in a way. Because we all have Dharma, I believe, to teach. So, and if I think about my own life, I've made some unusual choices that are, to me, had those momentous feeling of being in front of the store that I will continue to be challenged about stepping this door for many, many, many times, you know, from now on through the rest of my life. And I never regretted those choices. It's only the doors that I didn't step through in that way that sometimes I have regretted. So I myself feel a kind of kinship with people who are slightly foolish, one could say, but with a lot of conviction. Sometimes we all need to be a little bit too stubborn and too foolish and ready to walk our path and walk through those doors, even if we don't know what's on the other side. Carl Jung said, the first half of life is devoted to forming a healthy ego, and the second half is to go inward and let go of it. Ego processes are necessary for us to survive in, you know, tribes as we do, and for contacting our shadows and integrating with them. There is an arc to the human journey, and loss is definitely a part of it. So in our practice here sitting on the cushion, sometimes we come into contact with that level of reality before the mind, before ego. And everything we hold dear in sort of the ordinary life as we know it do not exist at that level. And in doing this practice, it is somewhat like that young person standing in front of that door and being asked a series of questions. Are you willing? Are you prepared? We will lose, in a way, everything on the other side of this door of practice yet on the other side of it, everyone and everything embraces you. This is what gives me a sense of faith to continue to enter through those doors in my own journeys, whatever form they take. There is no end to swimming and no end to flying. Sometimes the door opens for us and gets our attention, and the voice inside us may say, "Who are you to step through that door?" Well, my question is, if you find yourself standing in front of that door and the door opens for you, who are you not to step through it? Who are you to turn it down? I will stop here. I want to be sure there's plenty of time for comments and questions. 20 minutes. 25, perfect. So please, thoughts, questions, comments? Andy.
It's such an interesting take in the Genjo Koan Yang. Thanks. I felt that was such a creative way of presenting it with the pilot, athlete pilot. Mm. I never thought of it quite that way. And there is no end to the air, and if you accept loss and be with your life as it is, which is what I got from what you were talking about, there is no end to the possibility necessarily of what you're embracing. You don't know. There's a lot to enter, and that's what I received, and I really appreciate that. Mm. I did not expect it at all. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. I the sense we're in that with extensive activity comes extensive use, and with modest activity yet less use has always like been kind of with me. You know, sometimes I wonder, like, am I interpreting it, you know, sufficiently? But, you know, that's how I make use of the Genjo Koan, is like it gives me permission to try to make extensive use of what I have, you know. Yeah. So, and that's how I give myself, you know, when I tend to like lean into the edges of things, right, then I say, you know, Dogen is giving me permission to do this, to like make the space a little bit larger, right? Even, yeah, sometimes it can, I wonder if I'm a fool for doing so, but so be it.
Dogen.
Yeah, I like that thing that you quoted from Jung, saying that we spend the first half of our lives trying to assemble a healthy ego, and then afterwards we work on disassembling it.
Yeah.
And my literal sequential mind saw that, and then I thought of something else I've sort of heard in this Zendo many times, which is don't wait until you can love perfectly before you start to love.
Mm-hmm.
And realize that what Jung said doesn't necessarily mean I must finish this creating a healthy, intact ego before starting to not take it so seriously. Because I do have work to do, you know, in trying to reveal some of the early conditioning that I received. Maybe even not so, maybe conditioning from yesterday I'm trying to recognize and not take so seriously. But that's, I really appreciated you mentioning that. Does it feel okay to you to start disassembling the ego?
I think, given where we are in our lives, the assembling or the healing and the disassembling happens at the same time, which is all fine as well, you know. You know, we, like I said, like we don't come through life unscathed, you know? So it's actually perfectly fine that there are these kind of almost like entryways, right? To see that it can be disassembled, which can be our wounds from the past. You know, you see the cracks in it. Whereas, you know, someone with maybe a more robust ego may take longer to come to that in their life. But yeah, I think it's the process of seeing our egos and healing the aspects of it that should be healed is necessary to take place. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't bypass it.
Yeah. But it needn't be sequential.
No, exactly. It doesn't have to be sequential. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ben. Very beautiful talk.
Thank you.
I've had this image going through my own life transition currently in the last few years of the caterpillar, the cocoon, and the butterfly. Mm. And I also belong to this other kind of, lots of groups. One is a support group that is very action oriented. It's like, I use that metaphor with them. And what, well, you've been in the cocoon a long time. When are you going to get out and become a butterfly? And I'm just thinking, like, does it really work sequentially like this? I mean, can you go from the cocoon and go back to the caterpillar? And go from the cocoon and go to the butterfly? I know that's just these thoughts that came to me about, like, is it linear? Do you start off as a caterpillar and end up as a butterfly?
Yeah, I'm sure it's actually not linear. Yeah. You know, and our language, right, kind of forces things to be linear, and our mind as well, but things are not. It could be an aspect of our lives that feels like in the cocoon, and another aspect is already the butterfly, yeah. And then again and again and again, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so, and that's why that story about the old man who lives on the frontier is kind of interesting, because we can never accept good things for too long, because there's going to be change. You know, either good or bad, nothing is forever. No feelings are forever. And it's hard to remember that in the middle of anything, but it will simply become the next thing again. It will dissolve into soup again. Yeah. Yeah, and chaos, right, sometimes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and that's because we have this form, it feels like there's a continuity as well, but like it can be actually, if we can conceive this idea of chaos, right, like happening in a sort of alchemical way, you know, and we can have this ongoing physical form, but our life energies take on different patterns, and it will go through its own cycle.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. That was really beautiful. I was thinking before I came here, it's actually quite similar to his point, in a different way. I have a 3-year-old daughter, and I was thinking a lot this weekend and recently about the beginner's mind and being like a child and how we can learn from our children, because they're, you know, she's very present and happy, joyful creature. And so that reminds you, when you speak about loss and also a linear or unlinear journey, to me I was thinking a lot about the effort to try and go back to an early state that we potentially all had before life challenges us with, you know, childhood conditioning or loss or trauma or different things we experience. And, yeah, that's been my meditation, and why it's been to remember that we will have that child state in us.
Mm. Yeah, thank you. My baby daughter is almost 2, so I definitely connect with that. That's the sort of the content of my practice as well, is watching her and integrating that process and seeing myself live through that again, mm-hmm. too, and also seeing it as her mother, mm-hmm. you know, and seeing her comfort. She's going through a stage where was both my partner and my mother, almost like I couldn't quite be around because my daughter would always prefer me and cling to me. And so it's interesting to play with this, like her comfort of attachment and sort of complete safety with me, and her starting to take baby steps into herself, and also the discomfort or just the sort of new things that I come to with that process, you know? And she's so at home as soon as I'm there, you know, like I can feel, like when she's touching my body, she's home. And it's just really interesting, that particular state. And I do hope that she will always remember that and that I will always be able to provide that for her when she needs it. But I can also see that it's necessary for her to know that it's the thing that she can return to, but she doesn't always have to live there. That would be the cocoon, you know?
Thank you for the talk. I just want to share a couple of quotes that I thought of as you were giving the talk, and I want to touch upon a few points you made. One of them was, I think, like for me, for the first time, like the koan about the nature of the wood as it turns to ashes, and that the wood is not the ashes, and the ashes are not the wood, and they were there at the same time, was kind of like hit me quite profoundly. And I thought about when you were talking about loss, that how this loss kind of sometimes is connected to freedom as well, and the same duality or dichotomy is kind of like revealed on that. And so these two things kind of made me think about these two quotes that I had read. One of them was, which says that the root of suffering is attachment.
Yeah, yeah.
And so loss kind of like reminds us that, oh, this was us, this was our sense of self, this is what defined us, and it's not us anymore, and we feel this loss. But then it also brings a certain freedom to it. So that kind of made me think of that. And there's this another quote that I found very simple and difficult at the same time. It's supposed to be from some scriptures, and it's about the Buddha, and it just says that even in the empty forest he finds joy because he wants nothing.
Thank you. Yeah, that makes me feel just simply grateful for the place we're sitting in and the nature outside. I think on my own path, this particular piece of forest has been amazing in giving me that sense of true joy and like I'm wanting nothing. A deep, deep nourishment, yeah, and pleasure. Anyone else? Thoughts, questions? Don't hesitate to share.
I was wondering if you thought a sense of humor would help in any of this.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
I don't deal with change very well unless I approve it in advance in writing. One of my points of view. However, you know, with children, you lose them every day to what they were the day before.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Duh. You know, that's life, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's good that actually young children acquire a sense of humor pretty early. I thought that was pretty remarkable. They really like surprises and they really like physical comedy even. So, yeah, they learn to laugh at themselves, so which is super necessary because they fail constantly, right? So yes, that's I think we can all learn from them. And, you know, adaptive, healthy adaptations, right, like humor are super necessary, and that's part of a healthy ego. Is, you know, life brings us challenges, and when whether we feel sufficient ownership to try to use a healthy adaptations rather than maladaptive adaptations is makes all the difference, you know, in the quality of our lives.
I just realized I wanted to share. I want to share something.
Mm.
Thank you so much for the wonderful Dharma talk you just gave. With a combination of people speaking and giving feedback, I just realized that I'm going through a major transition. I am going through a major loss. And I made a decision in the last 24, 48 hours to disconnect from somebody. And that reminds me of the attachment and the suffering. And you hit that when you said that, and I see the story of the frontiersman and seeing it as we don't know if it's going to be a good thing or a bad thing. It feels like a bad thing because it hurts, but the disconnecting and the detachment. I hear that, and I just want to say that I'm receiving the message completely. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and it's painful, right? It feels like the muscles being pulled apart and ripped out. I understand. I think we all do, like that physical sense of loss, and it's just painful on a completely visceral level. And that's there's nothing light about it. However, it's a part of our experience that teaches us so much, right? About how valuable it was, right? And about our connection with kindness, like that poem, you know, you must lose things, you know, feel the future dissolving a moment, right? The future we had envisioned no longer would be the case. There would be some other form of future, but it's painful, and we have to accept that, and we have to even do our best to embrace it, even though in the moment it seems impossible, but just have the inclination of embracing it, I would say, is a part of the practice, right? You know, we can only do like incline our mind, incline our postures, you know, to towards something, and that's the best we can do. Thank you for sharing.
You know, a minute ago you said healthy ego, and just what popped in my mind was like we have tendency to think that the ego is something, like it's as if it's versus to see that actually it's because it's part of life, it's like a process.
Yes.
And I was just like for a moment, like briefly kind of like reminded of like my past researching to it, and I was just like, oh, it's this process that continuously thinks and believes its thoughts,
mm-hmm.
and he thinks that like if life would be the way I think it's supposed to be, I'll be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And it attaches to those ideas,
mm-hmm.
and it creates so much suffering
mm-hmm.
in that process. And when we see through that, and we see it with the what we call the six perfections, the six
mm-hmm.
parameters,
mm-hmm.
it's like oh. And I remember a talk by Alan Watts who said, like, who is that who knows that there is no ego?
Mm-hmm.
That was the title of the talk. And to live from that place of freedom is so very different versus, like, we think the ego thinks it needs to get rid of something versus to see that what it is really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And see
mm-hmm.
through that.
Mm-hmm.
Never like.
Mm-hmm.
Because for as long as we don't see clearly, nothing changes, really.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. And even when we can access the deeper place, our ego, the processing still happens. And that's a work, right? That's integration. And that's a necessary repair that still needs to happen. And the access to a deeper space, a deeper reality, help us see and therefore can repair it. Because if we're just in that, on that level, it's so much harder, right? To see the faultiness of it. Yeah. Yeah. So it's definitely a process. It's not a real thing, yet it is something that happens. And in that way, it is real, right? And workable. Yeah. Yeah, but reality is what we make of it, you know? I mean, it takes a lot of work. It takes constant commitment and conviction, right? Like a full level of conviction, right? Like we all have to do something radical, you know, in life to be our true selves. Like for many of us, like being here is radical, right? You know, not agreeing to what our family, you know, want us to do, etc., and like choosing to do a retreat, like a week-long retreat. That's a radical move, you know, and making other kinds of choices, you know, turning down good jobs, you know, we all have to, big and small things, you know, this is how we acknowledge that we have egos, other people have egos, sometimes the ego can be fighting each other, and we have to have conviction to a very subtle voice and a sense of this is what I need to do and this is the door I need to step through. Yeah.
Yeah. What you just said like touched really like this place of like this deep inner listening to the inner knowing that is not noisy and knows why things need to be done. Just has different way of movement. Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, I think the sense of being radical is something that, for me, very much connects with freedom, too. Like, we cannot truly be free without being odd or even bad in other people's eyes in some way. And that's I think, that's something I feel isn't necessarily taught in Buddhism and other traditions very much. But when it comes to, you know, daily ordinary life, there's a lot of resistance and defiance, you know, these kinds of things that come into play. And yeah, it's especially in today's world, I would say, you know, when the world is relatively crazy, it actually takes someone who may appear insane to be truly the acts of what other people may categorize as insanity to be truly sane. Yeah, and that's a challenging thing to even talk about. But I feel that in just different levels of my life, whether it's, you know, super mundane things like, you know, what do I do with my relatives, you know, as a woman, as a mother, etc., to like big things of like, you know, being here and yeah, livelihoods, etc. Yeah, I want to maybe just share this one last quote, which is you know, why is, you know, Gandhi said something, I'm paraphrasing, of, you know, first they laugh at you and then they fight you and then you win. And then they join you. Thank you. Thank you for correcting me. Right? And that, to me, connects with that image of that young woman stepping in front of the door, you know? And Gandhi, yeah, It's just interesting, you know, the set of questions that are posed in a way that I'm sure at moments were private to him. You know, he is a small guy who was pretty unsuccessful in the first half of his life. And yet, you know, it's a deep sense of knowing, a deep sense of conviction that made him such a giant for all of humanity. And I do feel that we can all be, if we truly embrace this idea that we can be free, then we can be the Gandhis in our own life, right? We can be the spiritual warriors. And that's, you know, that's, yeah, I think for me, that's how I draw some inspiration and some energy. And just knowing even the small, what seemingly mundane things that I do are how I am going towards freedom. I did hear the lunch bell, so I think we're going to end. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.